I remember the day as though it was both distant and just within reach, a cruel moment suspended in time. It began with the simplest of things, the warmth of the sun, the scent of flowers blooming beneath my feet, the gentle hum of bees gathering nectar. It was a day of peace, of innocence, where I wandered, unknowing that the world I had always known would soon shatter. The earth trembled beneath me, but I thought nothing of it at first. It was the faintest quiver, as if the soil was sighing. Then the chasm opened. It seemed to swallow me whole, its darkness consuming, inevitable. The cold hands of Hades reached from the depths, pulling me down, and in that moment, I screamed. Not from the physical pain, but from the horror of it, the suddenness, the loss. The light of the world above seemed so far, so unreachable. I had never been so terrified, not even when I was a child, nor when I had ventured too far from Demeter's sight. In those first moments, the fear was overwhelming. I thought of my mother, her face, her voice, her love. How could I leave her behind? How could I be taken so far from her, from the world I had always known? The thought of the underworld was a nightmare, a place of shadows and silence, a realm where light could never touch. I fought, oh, how I fought. I kicked, I screamed, I begged for mercy, but my cries, they were swallowed by the very earth that had betrayed me. There was no escape, no help, no way to return to my life. I was caught, lost in a realm of eternal darkness. And then he was there, Hades. His cold eyes met mine, his presence both terrifying and powerful. At first, I saw him only as the abductor, the villain, the one who had stolen me from everything I held dear. I was nothing to him, just a prize, a queen to be won. But what I felt, what twisted my insides the most, was that I could not escape him. There was no place for me to hide in this dark domain. Days, or was it weeks, passed in that dreadful place. The echoes of my cries, they seemed to fade, muffled by the endless void of the underworld. I was alone, alone with my fears, alone with my grief. But then the shadows began to shift. I felt the soft light of Hecate's presence, and my heart swelled with a fragile hope. Hecate, she had always been so kind to me. The shadows parted as she found me. Together, we called out to my mother. Her cry echoed through the land, pulling Demeter's desperate search to a fever pitch. When she came, it was as though the world exhaled in relief. Her love for me, her grief, her relentless determination to find me, to bring me back, was all-encompassing. Yet, how could she truly understand what I had endured or what had been done to me? The bond between us was no longer as it once was, and I felt a gap, one that I could not cross, not anymore. And then, the pomegranate. When Hades offered it to me, I knew. I knew the consequences. It was both a temptation and a curse. The taste of the seeds was sweet, their juice rich and dark, but with it, a bond was forged. I had consumed it. The fruit of the underworld. The price of this kingdom. I could no longer be wholly of the earth. I was bound to its depths. Now, I stand as the queen of the underworld. How strange it is to wear this crown, heavy, but not unwelcoming. I rule over those who have crossed into death, those lost souls who wander in the darkness, And though I carry the weight of this throne, my heart still holds remnants of the maiden I once was. I'm not her anymore. Not completely. I had been innocent, untouched by the weight of death, of loss, of even time's passing. Now I understand those things in ways I never could have before. My reign is not one of cruelty or malice, but of quiet understanding. I speak to the souls who wander here, guide them, comfort them. I am a bridge between the living and the dead. It is a role that I never wanted, but now carry with kind of solemn grace. When I'm with Hades, I feel the pull of something far more complex than I had imagined. There's affection, but also something darker. I'm both his equal and his prisoner, bound by the pomegranate's curse, yet also chosen to share in this dark kingdom. Sometimes I still resent it. I long to feel the warmth of the sun on my skin, to dance in the meadows with my companions. But there is something else here, too. Something powerful in the stillness of the underworld. I have learned that in the depths, there is strength. And in ruling beside Hades, I am learning to wield that strength. I have changed. The maiden who once flitted between flowers and laughter no longer exists, but in her place, something new has risen. A queen, yes, but also a woman who knows loss, who knows the depths of shadows, and who understands the weight of choices. I am Persephone, the queen of the underworld, and I will never be the same. Persephone is the queen of the underworld, wife of the god Hades, and the goddess of spring growth who was worshipped alongside her mother, Demeter. Prior to her more widely recognized moniker, Persephone, she was known as Kore, which means girl or maiden in Greek. Kore is the daughter of Zeus and Demeter. It is in the Homeric hymn to Demeter that we learn about Kore's abduction as she is picking flowers in a meadow with her nymph companions. In this hymn, we learn that Gaia is a part of the scheme to assist Hades in kidnapping Kore. As she bends down to pick up her favorite flowers, which is the narcissus, a crack opens in the earth, and Hades, with his horse-drawn chariot, he emerges to grab Kore and brings her to the underworld to rule alongside him as the queen of the world below. Horrified, Kore kicks and she screams, but she's powerless against the god of the underworld. Demeter is distraught at her daughter's disappearance, and she begins searching for her everywhere, frantically. Demeter learns from the goddess Hecate that she heard Kore screaming, but she didn't know where she had been taken. Helios, the sun god, is interrogated by Demeter after she learns that he had witnessed the kidnapping. Helios informs Demeter that Zeus approved the marriage between Hades and Kore. However, he also likes to add that she should be pleased with the union. Very angry by this, Demeter expresses her wrath by withholding her gift of the harvest, which causes a devastating famine, and this spreads across the earth. For 9 days, then, over the earth, queenly Demeter roamed about, holding blazing torches in her hands. As a result, the crops begin to wither, and the people, too, grow weak in parallel with the earth's diminishing bounty. Concerned by the decline in his mortal worship, Zeus pleads with Demeter to restore the land. However, he refuses to grant her demand that her daughter be returned. Zeus sends several messengers to Demeter, continuing to implore her, but she continues to refuse. Demeter decides to leave her current residence to essentially escape Zeus's harassment and the persistent messengers he continues to send. Disguised as an old woman, Demeter journeys to Ulysses, where she ends up being discovered by the daughters of Kelios, the lord of Ulysses. They invite her to accompany them to their home, but they're unaware of who she is. While at the home of Lord Kelios or Kelios, she becomes the caretaker of their infant, who is named Demophon. So, as a goddess, Demeter decides to anoint Demophon and grant him immortality. To do so, she places him in a smoldering fireplace surrounded by enchanted flames. However, his mother, she soon learns of Demeter's actions, and she's horrified to find her son essentially in the flames. In a fit of rage, Demeter abandons her plans to make Demophon immortal. She reveals her true form as a goddess, shedding her disguise as a crone, and then she demands that a temple be built in honor of her and Ulysses. She warns that in return for this tribute, she will offer mortals a path to redemption by teaching them her secret rites, which promises them hope for a blessed afterlife. Meanwhile, Zeus decides to reunite Kore with her mother and sends the messenger god Hermes to bring her back. Now, at this time, Kore, who is occupying the underworld, she is now known as Persephone. Persephone receives this news and she's completely overjoyed, and she's eagerly preparing to depart upon Hermes' arrival. However, Hades, who is deeply displeased with the turn of events, he begs her to stay. He promises that she will reign as queen over all that lives and moves. She will be revered by the gods, and she will wield vengeance on those who fail to honor her. Yet, Persephone remains unmoved by his promises, and she is determined to leave with Hermes. In a final attempt to keep her, Hades cunningly tricks her into eating 6 pomegranate seeds, knowing that this very act will bind her to the underworld for eternity. As a wise and experienced goddess, Demeter quickly senses foul play. Persephone, who's unable to keep her secret any longer, she confesses to her mother that Hades tricked her into eating these pomegranate seeds. "But Hades secretly put in my mouth the seed of a pomegranate, honey sweet food, and then I was unwilling. He made me eat it by force." So in response, Zeus decrees that Persephone must spend 1/3 of each year in the underworld as a consequence of her actions. Furious and heartbroken, Demeter declares that whenever she's separated from her daughter, she will withhold her gifts of abundance. This decision leads to the eternal cycles of growth and decay, giving rise to the changing seasons as we know them today. In the Orphic myth and later interpretations, Demeter is portrayed as deeply protective of Persephone, even going so far as to reject proposals from gods like Apollo and Hermes, who were both seeking to marry Persephone. Demeter, who is fearing that any union, especially with the powerful gods, would really bring harm or lead to the loss of her daughter, she strives to keep Persephone for herself. These later versions of the myth emphasizes Demeter's overprotective nature, a theme that is less prominent in the Homeric Hymn to Demeter, where her protective instincts are more focused on Persephone's abduction by Hades. When Kore steps into the role of Queen of the Underworld, that's when she transforms into Persephone. Her new name means Bringer of Death or Destroyer of Light. It also means She Who Shines in the Dark. This marks a very profound shift in her identity. This change is not only symbolic of her transition from maiden to woman, but also from daughter to wife and sovereign of the shadowy realm. Persephone is essentially thrust into adulthood without warning. She's forced to abandon her youth and embrace a role she never chose. At first glance, Persephone's story can seem to be one of victimhood and disempowerment. She has no say in her marriage, dictated by both her father and her mother, nor does she have a voice in her new unasked-for position as Queen of the Underworld. Stripped of autonomy, she appears to have little control over her fate. Her choices seem limited, even from those who supposedly love her. Yet, within this dark transformation lies the potential for deeper layers of power and understanding. As Queen of the Underworld, Persephone holds the power to rule with authority and make decisive choices, and she does so with confidence. Hades, who is quite fond of Persephone, says in the following passage, "While you are here, you shall rule all that lives and moves, and shall have the greatest rights amongst the deathless gods. Those who defraud you and do not appease your power with offerings, reverently performing rites and paying fit gifts, shall be punished forevermore." True to his word, Hades respects her autonomy, allowing her to thrive in her role as queen. He never seeks to undermine her, question her decisions, or make her feel small. Instead, he honors her strength and her sovereignty as a queen. In the underworld, Persephone flourished, and she would become known as a fair and just decider of fates. She interceded on behalf of heroes, she made judgments, and punished those who were to be punished. Homer describes her as the wife of Hades and the formidable, venerable, and majestic queen of the Shades, who exercises her power and carries into effect the curses of men upon the souls of the dead, along with her husband. Let's get into the dual nature of Persephone, exploring stories where she shows her favor and others where she reveals her wrath. First, we are going to begin with the story of Persephone and Minty. And this story revolves around the themes of jealousy, transformation, and the consequences of challenging a goddess. Some say it was jealousy, others justice. But when Minty boasted of replacing a queen, the ground itself responded, and Persephone made certain she bloomed no more. We began with Minty, who was a nymph, often associated with the river or spring that carried her name, and she was known for her beauty. According to the myth, Minty had an affair with Hades, of course the god of the underworld, when Persephone, Hades' new wife, discovered this infidelity, she became enraged with jealousy. Now, in some versions of the story, Minty's beauty is emphasized, and she's often described as having been an attractive and having a desirable figure, which is why Hades was very drawn to her. And in other myths, it's suggested that Minty was not content with her relationship with Hades and was bold enough to challenge Persephone's position as his wife. In her anger, Persephone confronts Minty, and depending on the version of the myth you choose, she either curses or physically transforms the nymph. Some versions say that Persephone turned Minty into a plant, typically the mint herb, so that she would never again be a threat to her. This transformation symbolizes Persephone's power and also serves as a reminder of the consequences of crossing her. In Oppian's version, it's actually Demeter who tramples Minty. In the story, Hades is already in a relationship with Minty, and she was again a nymph as well. And when she learned of what Hades had done to Persephone, and when he brought her down as his new wife and queen, Minty complains, and she becomes jealous of Persephone. So Demeter in this story decides to intervene, and she stomps Minty to death. Regardless, Minty is said to have been transformed into the mint herb, the mint plant, and we associate Minty today with this refreshing herb. Let's move on to another story that I think is a great example of Persephone's favor. The story of Persephone and Luce involves themes of love, transformation, and the afterlife. Luce was a nymph who, in some versions of the myth, was loved by Hades before he abducted Persephone and brought her to the underworld. According to the myth, Persephone was either jealous or she was very protective of her realm and her relationship with Hades. However, after Luce's death, Persephone, perhaps feeling a sense of compassion or recognizing the nymph's beauty, decided to honor her in a different way. Rather than taking any further action against Luce, Persephone transformed her into a white poplar tree. This transformation ensured that Luce would live on in the underworld in a different form, offering a symbolic sense of immortality in nature. The white poplar tree was regarded as sacred, and its association with the underworld was thought to be a sign of Persephone's favor. Now we move on to the story of Persephone. Now let's move on to the story of Persephone and Adonis. The story of Persephone and Adonis varies slightly across different sources. However, the most popular version of the tale comes from the works of Ovid and other ancient texts, including those in the Orphic tradition. In this version of the myth, Adonis was a stunningly beautiful man, and he was the result of a forbidden love affair between Myrrha, or sometimes called Smyrna, who was a mortal woman, and her own father, the Syrian king Thais. After the birth of Adonis, he was placed in a box and left to die, but he was saved by the goddess Aphrodite, and she found him and took him in. She entrusted Adonis as a child to Persephone, and Persephone raises him in the underworld. As Adonis grew up, both Aphrodite and Persephone fell in love with him due to his extraordinary beauty. This led to a conflict between the two goddesses, each wanting to keep him for herself. The dispute over Adonis's affections reached Zeus, and Zeus intervened and decided that Adonis would spend one third of the year with Persephone in the underworld, and then one third with Aphrodite, and the final third, he was free to roam as he chose. In this myth, Persephone's role is primarily that of a caretaker who fosters Adonis's growth and beauty while he's in the underworld. Again, however, her claim over him is often portrayed as less passionate than Aphrodite's. In some versions, Persephone doesn't want to let him go when the time comes for him to return to Aphrodite, and this leads to tension and conflict between the two goddesses. In other versions, Adonis, he loved Aphrodite more, and when he refused to return to Persephone's kingdom, Persephone, who was angered and hurt, she sent a wild boar to kill Adonis, who dies in Aphrodite's arms and whose blood transforms him into the anemone flower. Now we will move on to the story of Persephone and the Coronides. The story of Persephone and the Coronides is a less commonly told tale from Greek mythology, and it focuses on a specific branch of the Coronides family who is often linked to the healing god Asclepius. The Coronides family, they were notable healers, and they were often associated with the divine powers of medicine and healing. This family's most famous member is Asclepius, the god of healing and medicine, who was revered for his ability to cure diseases, and he was also known to bring the dead back to life. However, the story involving Persephone and the Coronides doesn't focus on Asclepius himself, but rather the story focuses on his mother, Coronis, who plays a pivotal role in this myth. Coronis was a beautiful mortal woman, and she caught the eye of Apollo, the god of the sun, music, and prophecy. However, Coronis was unfaithful to Apollo, and of course he was enraged by her betrayal and caused her death. But even in the face of death, Apollo, who had a very deep connection to the healing arts, he couldn't ignore his love for Coronis. In a final act of compassion, Apollo saved their unborn child from her womb, and that child would later grow up to be the god Asclepius, who became famous for his healing abilities. Now, this is where Persephone comes into the story. Upon Cronus' death, her soul descends to the underworld where Persephone is reigning as queen. Persephone, who is often seen as a judge and the ruler over the souls of the deceased, she received Cronus in her realm. The mortal woman's spirit, having lived a life that was filled with both love and betrayal, was now at the mercy of Persephone. In some versions of the myth, Persephone shows compassion towards Cronus. While Cronus had been unfaithful in her life, Persephone's role as a queen of the underworld often placed her in a position to be the ultimate judge of souls. And though death was inevitable for all mortals, Persephone, understanding the complexities of life, she might have seen the sorrow and the pain within Cronus' life and her untimely end. Some versions suggest that Persephone allowed Cronus' soul to rest in peace, extending a form of mercy and understanding towards her. The real twist, however, lies in the birth of Asclepius and essentially how this connects to Persephone's domain. When Asclepius was born, after Apollo saved him from Cronus' womb, the child was taken to Chiron, the wise centaur who would raise him and teach him the art of healing. The connection to Persephone in this part of the story comes from the spiritual inheritance that Asclepius received, the divine gifts of life and death. Asclepius, with his extraordinary ability to heal and even resurrect the dead, was granted his powers in part due to his lineage, being born from the mortal Cronus and the divine Apollo, so kind of like a demigod. But it suggested that his powers were also influenced by his ancestral connection to the underworld, where death could be reversed or alleviated in rare and exceptional circumstances. This duality of life and death, medicine and mortality, mirrors Persephone's own domain as the goddess who governs both life seasons and the afterlife. Though Persephone doesn't play an overwhelmingly active role in this story, her position as queen of the underworld and her association with the souls of the dead gives her a significant background presence. She is the ultimate authority in the afterlife, and this is where she has to ensure the proper order of souls, including those who pass away with unfinished business. In some interpretations, Persephone's compassionate judgment and her interactions with souls like Cronus's reflects the complex nature of her character as both a figure of death and renewal. Now let's move on to the story of Persephone and Sisyphus, which is, I think, a story of her favor. Few divide death more arrogantly than Sisyphus. Fewer still were permitted to try. And through it all, Persephone watched, neither condemning nor forgiving, but remembering. Sisyphus, the crafty and cunning king of Corinth, was a man known for his trickery, deceit, and cleverness. He was always outsmarting others, and even the gods were not safe from his schemes. One of his greatest offenses was to deceive death itself, Thanatos, by tricking him into chains, making it impossible for anyone to die. As you can imagine, this did not sit well with the gods, especially Hades, the god of the underworld. In retaliation for Sisyphus' insolence, Zeus sentenced Sisyphus to an eternal punishment. He would be forced to push a massive boulder up a hill, only for it to roll back down just as he neared the top. This endless, futile task symbolized his endless punishment for trying to cheat death. But what about Persephone, the queen of the underworld? She's an interesting figure in the story because while she's often seen as the more compassionate and merciful goddess compared to her husband Hades, she doesn't hesitate when it comes to upholding justice. When Sisyphus arrived in the underworld, his usual trickster nature was in full swing. As part of his punishment, he attempted to manipulate Persephone. In some versions of the myth, Sisyphus tries to use his wit to win Persephone over by making promises or by weaving complex arguments. However, Persephone, who is not easily fooled and knows the weight of justice in the underworld, she was not moved by his manipulations. Instead of granting him any favors or leniency, Persephone, in her role as Queen of the Dead, upholds the divine order. She ensures that Sisyphus is not given any relief from his eternal punishment. Even though he attempted to charm or deceive her as he had done with others, Persephone's wisdom and her understanding of justice prevail, and she supports the sentence. While Hades is often the focus of myths involving the dead, Persephone's involvement here is significant. As queen of the underworld, she has the power to influence the fate of souls in her domain. She's not just a passive figure in the shadows, but a force of justice and balance. In the case of Sisyphus, she stands firmly in defense of the rules, showing that trickery and deceit will not be tolerated, even if it comes from a king who is famous for outwitting gods. Persephone, in her own way, represents the inevitable consequences of mortal actions, particularly when it comes to attempting to outsmart the natural order of life and death. Sisyphus's punishment, pushing the boulder forever, is the direct result of his violation of these cosmic laws. And Persephone, therefore, she becomes this figure of divine order, making sure that Sisyphus faces the full weight of his wrongdoing. And Sisyphus's eternal struggle is often seen as a metaphor for the human condition, particularly the endless pursuit of goals that seem ultimately futile. Persephone's involvement underscores the mythological lesson that no one, not even kings, can escape the consequences of their actions, especially when it comes to defying the natural laws of life and death. Now let's move on to the story of Persephone and Orpheus. Before Orpheus could plead his case, his music did all the speaking, stirring even the still heart of Persephone, who knew too well the cost of love severed by death. Orpheus, the legendary musician and poet, was not just known for his incredible musical talent. His lyre could charm even the wildest of animals. It could make trees and rocks dance, and it could soften the hearts of gods and mortals alike. His love for his wife Eurydice was profound, and their story was marked by tragedy. When Eurydice died, Orpheus, overcome with grief, descended into the underworld to bring her back. Orpheus's music was so beautiful and haunting that it moved the very gods of the underworld. When he reached Hades and Persephone, he played a song so heart-wrenching that it softened the hearts of the grim rulers of the dead. Persephone, usually a figure of power and severity in the underworld, was deeply moved by Orpheus's music. The queen of the underworld understood the pain of losing a loved one, having herself been separated from her own mother, Demeter, for part of the year. Persephone and Hades, both touched by Orpheus's song, agreed to grant his request. They would allow Eurydice to return with him to the land of the living, under one condition. Orpheus was not allowed to look back at her until they both had reached the surface. If he did, she would be lost to him forever. As Orpheus and Eurydice ascended from the depths of the underworld, Orpheus's longing and doubt became too much to bear. Just as they were about to reach the surface, Orpheus turned around to ensure that Eurydice was still following him, forgetting the warning. In that instance, Eurydice was lost to him forever, fading back into the shadows of the underworld, her second chance at life slipping through his fingers. This tragic event, however, didn't end Orpheus's connection to the underworld. Orpheus's grief was so profound that he swore off the love of women forever, focusing only on the love of the gods and nature. His rejection of the love of women, however, angered the Maenads, the wild followers of Dionysus, who ultimately killed him. In this story, Persephone's role is one of compassion and empathy. While she is often portrayed as stern and authoritative, particularly when dealing with souls in the underworld, here we see a more nuanced side of her character. She understands the depths of Orpheus's sorrow and is moved by his grief, recognizing the pain of losing a loved one, something she herself has endured in her own life. Persephone's intervention in granting Orpheus the chance to retrieve Eurydice speaks to her deeper role as a goddess of transition, not only ruling the underworld, but also embodying the cyclical nature of life and death. She allows Orpheus to experience the possibility of love beyond death. But at the same time, her decision to enforce the rule that he not look back emphasizes the inevitability of death and the irreversible nature of loss. Persephone's action in this myth shows her as a powerful yet compassionate goddess, willing to extend mercy even in the realms of death. But she upholds the rules of the underworld and the harsh realities of existence. Loss is permanent, and there are boundaries that even the gods cannot reverse. Now we will move on to the story of Persephone and Heracles. Not all who enter the underworld do so in chains. When Heracles arrived on his 12th labor, Persephone met him not as a captor, but as a sovereign with a sense of occasion. Heracles, the great hero of Greek mythology, was tasked with completing 12 labors as punishment for killing his wife and children in a fit of madness, an act inflicted upon him by the goddess Hera. The final and most difficult of these labors was to capture Cerberus, the three-headed dog who guarded the gates of the underworld and prevented souls from escaping. This labor would bring Heracles directly into the realm of Persephone, queen of the underworld. In this myth, Heracles was sent to the underworld to capture Cerberus, who was said to be an almost unbeatable beast. The journey to the underworld itself was perilous, and the hero faced many challenges. However, Heracles had a special advantage. He was known for his strength and his resilience, and he had successfully completed many seemingly impossible tasks before. Before entering the underworld, Heracles sought permission from Hades and Persephone to take Cerberus. Since Cerberus was considered an essential guardian of the underworld, it was not easy to persuade the gods to let him take the beast. But Heracles, who had the strength to subdue Cerberus without killing him, made his case, and the gods agreed to let him take the dog, provided he did not harm him. While Hades is often depicted as the more active figure in the myth, it's Persephone who, as queen of the underworld, holds sway over the final decision. She grants Heracles permission to take Cerberus with the understanding that the hero would not bring harm to the creature. Persephone, as the goddess associated with death, rebirth, and transformation, she represents the balance between life and the afterlife, and her involvement in this labor reflects her role in governing the realm of the dead. Heracles descended into the underworld, where he encountered the three-headed dog, Cerberus. The beast was known for his terrifying and immensely strong nature, but Heracles, with his incredible might, was able to overpower it. The myth usually portrays Heracles as using his physical strength to subdue Cerberus without killing him. He bound the creature and led it back to the surface world. Once Heracles returned to the surface with Cerberus, he presented the beast to Eurystheus, the king who had given him the 12 labors. Cerberus, despite his fearsome reputation, was harmless in Heracles' grasp, and he completed the labor as instructed. At this point, the involvement of Persephone and Hades in the story comes to a close. After the labor was completed, Heracles returned Cerberus to the underworld as agreed, and he was allowed to release the creature back to his duties guarding the gates of death. Persephone's decision to allow Heracles to take him was crucial, as it was not only an act of mercy, but also one that reaffirmed her authority in the underworld. Now we will move on to the story of Persephone and Alcestis. Alcestis, a woman renowned for her beauty and virtue, finds herself caught in the tragic web of fate. Her beloved husband, Admetus, is struck by a terminal illness. Despite the pleadings of his family and friends, no one can save him. Yet, there's one sliver of hope. Apollo, the god of prophecy and healing, steps in. He tells Admetus that if someone is willing to die in his place, he can live. Enter Alcestis, who in a selfless act of love, volunteers to die for her husband. But here's where things get interesting. Alcestis, offering herself as a sacrifice, is destined to journey to the underworld, where Persephone reigns as queen. You'd think god like Hades would simply take her, but Persephone, well, she's not your ordinary goddess of the underworld. No, Persephone is not just about death. She's about rebirth, the cycles of life, and even compassion for the brave souls who enter her domain. So when Alcestis arrives in the underworld, Persephone, moved by her noble sacrifice, does something unexpected. She welcomes Alcestis with open arms. Instead of simply accepting her fate and locking her away in the shadowy depths, Persephone offers Alcestis compassion. Seeing the depth of Alcestis's love for Admetus, Persephone decides to do something rare in the underworld. She gives Alcestis the chance to return to the world of the living. But there's a catch. To make this happen, Heracles, and yes, that Heracles that we were just speaking about, enters the scene, completing the heroic cycle. He journeys to the underworld, fights death in the Battle of Wits and Strength, and rescues Alcestis, bringing her back to the land of the living. So why is Persephone's intervention here so intriguing? It shows a softer side of the goddess, a side that is often overshadowed by her darker associations. In many ways, Persephone represents the cycle of life and death. Death is inevitable, but it is not without mercy or hope for renewal. She recognizes the deep love Alcestis has for Admetus and offers a kind of redemption, or perhaps a glimmer of light in a world which is often defined by darkness. The entire myth, in a sense, connects the themes of love, sacrifice, and rebirth, which is a perfect narrative for Persephone's domain, where death is not final, but a part of a cycle that always makes way for renewal. Alcestis's return is a symbol of hope that even after great loss, something new can emerge. Now we move on to the story of Persephone and Pirithous. Pirithous was a mortal king, the son of Ixion, who was famous for his adventurous spirit and his close friendship with Theseus, the king of Athens. In many myths, Pirithous and Theseus are portrayed as these daring heroes who often undertook bold and dangerous quests together. However, their decision to venture into the underworld and try to abduct Persephone, the queen of the dead, was one of their most reckless and ill-fated adventures. The story begins when Pirithous, desiring a wife, sets his sights on Persephone, the beautiful and powerful queen of the underworld. Pirithous was undeterred by the fact she was already married to Hades, and we know he is the god of the underworld. It's said that Pirithous, alongside Theseus, believed they could not only abduct Persephone from this realm of the dead, but also marry her, despite the dangers of angering Hades. Pirithous' reasoning for this dangerous act was likely a mixture of desire, ambition, and hubris as he believed he could get away with such an audacious crime. Theseus, who was always loyal to his friend, agreed to help Pirithous in his quest, despite knowing the risks involved. Together, they journeyed to the underworld with the intent to abduct Persephone. As soon as Pirithous and Theseus arrived in the underworld, their plan unraveled disastrously. Hades was not amused by their intrusion, especially their audacity in trying to abduct his wife. He welcomed them into his realm with an invitation that seemed kind, but was in reality a trap. Hades invited them to sit on his magnificent throne, a gesture that lured them into a dangerous trap. As soon as Pirithous and Theseus sat down on the throne, they became trapped by the enchanted seat. They were unable to rise, and they were held in place by the very power of the underworld. This was Hades' punishment for their attempted abduction of Persephone, as well as for their audacity in entering his domain without permission. In some versions of the story, Persephone is somewhat passive in this incident, as she is simply the object of Pirithous' desire. However, there are versions where Persephone might play a more subtle role, either in the punishment or in the events surrounding her abduction, as she is the queen of the underworld and thus an integral part of the realm's governance. Pirithous and Theseus were left trapped in the underworld, suffering for their crimes. Theseus was eventually rescued by Heracles, who's also known as Hercules, as part of his famous 12 labors, but Pirithous was not so fortunate. According to most versions of the myth, he remained forever bound to the throne of Hades, a prisoner in the underworld, unable to escape or to be freed. This eternal punishment served as a reminder of the consequences of defying the gods, particularly when it came to Persephone and the underworld, realms that were sacred and untouchable. Pirithous's desire for Persephone and his bold attempt to take her as his wife resulted in an unending torment, and he remained trapped for all eternity as punishment for his hubris. Let's now move on to the story of Persephone and Psyche. When Psyche descended into the realm of death to fetch beauty itself, she found not terror, but a queen, composed, discerning, and perhaps fairly amused. In the tale of Persephone and Psyche, Psyche was tasked with one of her most challenging trials by the goddess Aphrodite to retrieve a jar of Persephone's beauty cream from the depths of the underworld. This was a perilous mission, part of a series of demanding tasks meant to humble and even test Psyche's resolve. As instructed, Psyche journeyed to the dark realm of Hades, where Persephone ruled alongside her husband. There, she was granted the coveted beauty preparation, a gift from the goddess of the underworld herself. With the jar in hand, Psyche began her journey to return back to Aphrodite to fulfill her command. However, on her way back, curiosity and temptation overtook Psyche. Despite being cautioned not to open the jar, she couldn't resist. She cracked the lid, expecting to find the beautiful cream that would grant her extraordinary beauty. But instead, within the jar lay not the cream, but a deep and uncontrollable sleep, the very essence of Hades' Stygian slumber. As soon as the lid was lifted, the heavy, suffocating sleep seeped out, swirling around Psyche like a dark cloud. It immediately overtook her, dragging her to the ground, and she collapsed, motionless, as if her life had been drained from her body. She lay there, still and lifeless, her limbs stiff as though a corpse at rest. Unfortunately, Eros, who is Psyche's beloved, found her in this state. With great care, he wiped away the cursed sleep from her body and restored it back into its box, locking it away once more. He tenderly revived Psyche, bringing her back to life and ensuring the sleep of Hades never again threatened her. In the past, Persephone was not just the queen of the underworld, but she was also known as what is called Praxidike, or an exactor of justice. She is the defender of the vulnerable who offers retribution. In the Odyssey, Homer describes her as the dreaded Proserpine. Persephone was only a cause for dread if you had committed wrongdoings. The title of Praxidike shows us that Persephone could be called upon for reckoning and retribution, but she was also bestowed the epithet of Deira, or Deira, meaning knowing one. This implies that her resolutions are drawn from an accurate understanding of truth. Homer also describes her as the majestic queen of the shades. Shades in Greek mythology refers to the spirits or the souls that reside in the underworld. As queen, she has a duty of care to the shades. Now I would like to share a very quick story of Persephone and mankind. So in the Pseudo-Hyginus, or works falsely attributed to Gaius Julius Hyginus, a Roman writer and scholar who lived around the 1st century BC. Persephone is credited with the creation of humanity using a piece of clay. The tale unfolds as Persephone, spotting some mud, decides to shape it into the form of a man. When Zeus observes her creation, she asks him, he doesn't ask her, but she asks him to breathe life into the clay figure. Zeus agrees, bringing the man to life. Eager to name her creation, Persephone suggests giving him her own name, but Zeus refuses. The two argue, and then Gaia intervenes, insisting that the man should bear her name since he is formed from her earth. At this point, Cronos steps in to settle this dispute, proclaiming that the man shall be called Homo, derived from humus, the earth from which he was made. I wanted to tell that story because I think that's a lesser known story about Persephone. Whenever we hear the stories about Persephone, again, they're either the abduction stories or her tales of ruling as queen in the underworld, but I don't think many people attribute the story of humankind or mankind or creation of humanity to the goddess Persephone. Did Persephone have children? Persephone did have offspring, which included Zagreus and Melanie, whom she bore with, yes, Zeus, her father, and the Erinyes, whom she bore with Hades. I'd like to now move on to the Eleusinian mysteries, which is a very big topic, but I'll do my best to kind of reduce it here for our sake. The Eleusinian mysteries were ancient religious rites that were held in honor of Demeter and her daughter Persephone, which took place at the town of Eleusis near Athens, Greece. These mysteries were some of the most important and secretive religious ceremonies of ancient Greece, lasting for over 1,000 years from the Mycenaean period, which is 1600 BC, until the 4th century CE, or we could just say AD, when the rise of Christianity led to their decline. The mysteries focused on the themes of death, rebirth, and the afterlife, and they were considered a central element of Greek spirituality, symbolizing the connection between the mortal world and the divine. The mysteries were held annually and involved a series of secretive rituals that included purification, fasting, and symbolic reenactments of Demeter and Persephone's myth. The ceremonies are believed to have been a form of initiation, providing those who participated with special spiritual knowledge. The mysteries were split into two parts, the lesser mysteries and the greater mysteries. Lesser mysteries, let's talk about those first. The lesser mysteries were held at the beginning of the year, and these were preliminary rites involving the purification and the preparation for the greater mysteries. Now let's talk about the greater mysteries. The greater mysteries were the main event that took place in the fall, and they lasted for several days. It involved a sacred pilgrimage to Eleusis or Eleusis, purification rituals, prayers, sacrifices, and the revealing of sacred objects and teachings. Initiates participated in these rites to understand the secrets of life, death, and rebirth with the aim of receiving spiritual enlightenment and, importantly, the promise of a better afterlife. Let's talk about Persephone's role in these mysteries. So, Persephone, as queen of the underworld, she played a central role in these mysteries. Her myth was seen as symbolic of the cycles of life, death, and rebirth, themes that were, of course, core to the mysteries. So, for the symbol being the symbol of death and rebirth, Persephone's annual journey to and from the underworld, which was symbolized by her abduction and her return, it was seen as a representation of the seasonal cycle of growth, decay, and renewal in the natural world. Mysteries were thought to help participants understand these cycles on a spiritual level, offering them hope or even renewal in the afterlife. The myth of Persephone's abduction by Hades, her descent into the underworld, and her eventual return to the surface each year, it was central to the themes of the mystery. Her annual stay in the underworld, during which the earth becomes barren, and her return, which brings about spring and fertility, mirrors the human experience of death and rebirth. Initiates transformation. Let's talk about that a little bit. So, Persephone's descent into the underworld and return to the earth was also symbolic of the initiate's spiritual transformation. Through the rituals, the initiates symbolically died and were reborn, mirroring Persephone's own journey. The promise of the mysteries was that the participants, through their initiation, would gain a deeper understanding of the afterlife and the promise of a blessed existence after death, much like Persephone's dual role as both the goddess of life and death. One of the most famous elements of these mysteries was the consumption of a special drink called kikion. The drink was made from a mixture of barley, water, and a form of psychoactive substance, though the exact ingredients remain speculative. It's thought to have included a type of mold that grows on barley, which is called, I believe, ergot or orgo, maybe ergot. And this contains a precursor to LSD, making it a pretty powerful hallucinogen. Let's talk about the symbolism of this drink. So this drink was likely intended to help initiates achieve altered states of consciousness, allowing them to have these mystical or visionary experiences. And this would have been part of the ritualistic process of communion with the divine and the spiritual realm. The kikion or kekion, but kikion was seen as an important tool for connecting the initiates with the gods and to help them understand the mysteries of life and death. So while they're drinking the kikion during these mysteries, again, it may have helped them experience the sense of communion with the gods, especially with Demeter and Persephone, and allowed them to perceive the spiritual world in a more direct and personal way. And of course, the altered states of consciousness, which was brought on by the drink itself, could have enabled the initiates to have visions that reinforce the teachings of the mysteries. What's important, I think, to mention here, and what the biggest takeaway of the mysteries are itself, is that they promised the initiates the hope of a more favorable afterlife. So many people think that these mysteries focused on how to live a better life, but really it gave them the promise of having a more blessed experience in the afterlife itself. So as Persephone, ruled over the dead in the underworld, her involvement in the mysteries was a symbol of the idea that death was not the end. Instead, it was a transformation into another form of existence. The central message of the mysteries was that by participating in the rituals, initiates would be granted spiritual rebirth and be given the hope of a better life after death. And Persephone, as a goddess who transcends death through her cyclical return to life, she represented the possibility of an afterlife that was free from suffering, unlike the shadowy existence of the ordinary dead, which was a common belief back in ancient Greece. So, if you participated in these mysteries, you symbolically took part in Persephone's cycle, understanding that death was not something to fear, but rather a transition into a different, potentially more peaceful state of existence, which you would experience having been an initiate in these mysteries. Now let's move on to what Persephone looked like. How has she been betrayed or discussed historically? So, Persephone is typically depicted as a young woman who's holding sheaves of grain and a flaming torch, right? Which is kind of reminiscent of the goddess Hecate. Sometimes she's shown in the company of her mother, Demeter, and she's shown also with the hero Triptolemus, the teacher of agriculture. She's also seen at times holding a scepter. So there's multiple representations of Persephone. What are some good offerings for her? Well, let's talk about her plants, colors, stones. And if we talk about plants first, let's discuss jasmine and, of course, Narcissus, the flower that she was smelling or looking at when she was abducted. There's asphodel. And of course, we're all familiar with the timeless fruit pomegranate that's affiliated with Persephone. Her colors include red and black. And if we think about her in, as a spring goddess, at least in that phase, you might want to consider brighter colors, pink, yellow, and pale blue. Believe it or not, many people wouldn't think that, but it depends on if you're working with Persephone or learning from her in terms of rebirth or being in the underworld with her. Her stones are going to be garnet, ruby, onyx, obsidian, and carnelian, and bats and bat wings are also associated with her. One thing to keep in mind always is verified personal gnosis and unverified personal gnosis, right? So when you have gnosis that is quote unquote unverified, it's your personal experience with Persephone, and she will show you things that maybe are not found traditionally in literature, right? For example, she may ask you to bring her a stone that may not be a traditional darker colored stone. It could be something completely different, or she may present herself very differently, right? So we trust the way she presents for us because she's presenting that way for a reason and for the lessons that we are in the process of learning. So, where are her temples? Where was she dominantly worshipped? Well, we find that they're mentioned in Corinth, Sparta, and Megara, and also in the south of Italy. How does Persephone help humans? This is a very good question because many people relate to her due to her experience of being abducted, being betrayed, right? Having no agency or no power. And yes, you might connect with her because her story reflects these universal themes, also of transformation, empowerment, and the balance between light and dark. So, not so much always disempowerment, right? I think she's an archetype of resilience, healing, and growth, especially for those people who are navigating personal struggles or experiencing deep changes in their lives, like a lot of us are. I think Persephone's journey offers this very powerful message that through hardship, of course, one can evolve. One can learn to embrace their power and ultimately have the power to shape their own destiny. So, whether someone is drawn to her for her connection even to the natural world or to her strength or as a ruler or her embodiment of duality, that's something very special about Persephone. She does offer a pathway to understanding the complexities of life and finding the balance between both the light and the dark. Persephone, often seen as the goddess of the underworld and of course the embodiment of the cycles of life and death, she also carries within her a very deep connection to justice. And this is a dimension of her character that is often overshadowed by her association with the darkness and with transformation. So in many ways, Persephone's role as the queen of the underworld involves upholding cosmic balance and ensuring that both the life and death occur according to natural order. Though it's not always discussed as a goddess of justice, you know, in the ways, let's say, that Athena or Themis are discussed, Persephone, she does wield a profound authority over the realm of the dead, where she meets out consequences and she guides souls towards their rightful destinations. Her involvement in the realm of justice can be seen in how she pretty much governs the souls that enter the underworld, ensuring that the departed face what they deserve based on their actions and life. She's not merely a passive figure. She's an active ruler who determines fate. She meets out punishment and enforces the rules of the afterlife. Persephone's justice is not always immediate or straightforward. It's intricately tied to balance, restoration, and even retribution. Furthermore, Persephone's own story reflects the theme of just retribution. Her abduction by Hades, for instance, is both an act of injustice and a pivotal moment in her journey towards power. Her ability to navigate, reclaim, and even transform her own fate is a testament to her capacity for restoring justice, not just in the mortal world, but within the divine realms as well. Whether through her decision to allow the seasons to change or her influence over the dead, Persephone's role is integral to the cosmic balance and the distribution of justice in the universe. So in essence, Persephone is more than a goddess of transformation. She's a figure of retribution, fairness, and the impartiality that governs life and death. Her influence speaks to the ultimate balance between opposing forces and the maintenance of cosmic order, a balance in which justice prevails even in the darkest corners of existence.